Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name's Bill Cundiff. Oh, my mic seems like it's a little loud.
Just your headphones are too loud.
It could be.
So who's our sponsor today?
Our sponsor this hour is Team Power, our local Kubota tractor dealer. They're up on 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And right now they've got some deals going on brand new Kubota tractors. Go up and see them. They also have their service special running. You can get a discount on your service labor. And give them a call.
Mowers, tractors. Mowers, tractors,
they got it all going on.
If it's orange, you guys are in it.
Yeah, yeah. And this weekend you can see them down at the Shasta District Fair. They've got a display down there for the Redding Sport and Boat Show, I think it is.
It's really the Redding Rains Every Year on It show.
Yeah, it is.
They should just change the name.
Yeah, take an umbrella. But good turnout from what I understand. Anyway, give them a call at 226-9226 or see them online at reddingtractors.com.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
Without incident.
There you go.
Because we have a serious topic today, so we don't want to, you know, goof around and get derailed. And I know we're going to need every minute of today's show. Our guest is Dr. Harry Booyens, and this is The Real South Africa, Part 9. It's a good thing I started numbering the shows, because otherwise it would just be too confusing.
Right.
But the subtitle, I suppose we'll call it, on the program is The South African Crisis Has Reached the U.S. Border. You might be asking, how could we possibly talk about South Africa again? Oh, there's more.
It's amazing that mainstream media has not touched this.
A tiny bit. And he's going to talk about that today. But honestly, now, you know, the programs we've done on the border, here comes South Africa connected to that. And so we will let, We will let Dr. Booyens do all of that. And I guess I should tell you about him in case you've never heard of him. And how could you not have heard of him? There were obviously 8 previous episodes.
That's right. Let's hope you listen to at least one of them.
Okay, you missed like one or two, maybe, but not all of them. You can always find everything about the program and all those past episodes that we're hammering you about at wethepeopleradio.us. Everything is stored on our site commercial-free, and you can use it however you like. They are MP3 files. So you can give them to other people. If you have a club or a group and you want to play them in a meeting or put them on CDs and sell them to raise money, we don't care. We do this show to educate, so you can do whatever you like. And Dr. Harry Booyens is an internationally recognized, multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist. So this isn't just a person with opinions. This is a person with some credentials. He is originally from South Africa with a 360-year bloodline in that country. He currently lives with his family on the forested slopes outside of Vancouver, Canada. His life as a scientist exposed him to many of the realities of the Cold War and the period immediately following the fall of Berlin, the Berlin Wall. It's funny how all these things are all coming together. The border, the communism, I mean, you name it, it's all intersecting.
There's plenty to talk about, that's for sure.
And his time included interaction with the United States and British defense establishments. He applies his lifetime of science and research and interpretive skills to history and genealogy and writes with factual accuracy and an engaging style, and I can testify to that. We get quite a few emails from him, and I try to include many of those on the website for you. Hard Evidence is a trademark of his work, and it's won him a number of awards. He focuses on making Americans aware of what is happening in South Africa, the historic parallels between the two countries, and the warning that South Africa holds for Western civilization in general and the United States of America in particular. So I will we'll defer to him at this point. And just to, in case we air this at a different time, it's March 3rd, 2019, when we're first airing this. So if things have changed by the time you hear this or it is replayed, just know that the reference point is March 3rd, 2019. And our guest is Dr. Harry Booyens.
Welcome, Harry.
Hi, Bill.
You always sound so good on Skype. It sounds like you're right here.
I think that's kind of the idea with it. I did a radio session, 2 of them, in the last few days, and they don't sound too good, man.
Oh, with the phone? Using just regular phone connect?
The regular phone connection, not so good.
Well, it's a hit and miss around our deal. Sometimes the Skype works great, and then other times it's just one big technical snowball running downhill.
Yeah, you mentioned the South Africa thing, and you mentioned the border, and I got like a whole array of papers surrounding me here because there's so many different points from which one can start, each of which is pretty much immediately relevant to Americans. But maybe we should start with that point about the border.
Yes.
Sure.
And I know you sent me the, and I have it, but the part about the book jacket, so I didn't want to just be reading. So you let me know when you want to include that.
Okay.
Lest you think I didn't actually read your email. I didn't want to get in trouble right at the very beginning.
You will be tested on that email, madam, and you know I'm from South Africa. We do terrible things to people, I believe. Isn't that what the media says?
Oh, yeah.
Monsters.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Do you have that cover?
I do.
Excerpt? Why don't you read that? Because I think that may be a good point to start.
Okay. All right, so this is from the back cover of what... Okay, why don't you tell them about your book, since you're better about your book than I am.
For my sins, I wrote a book called Amabulu back in 2014. It was published, and around about then, I made some predictions. And this excerpt is off the back cover, and this is what I thought Aaron might want to share with everyone who's listening.
And there's information about the book. I put it actually, it's always on the web, along actually with the other 8 shows. I have the links for those all on the page for today. So at wethepeopleradio.us, it's all sitting right there. Okay, so the West has finally realized that bringing democracy to the Middle East and Southwest Asia is not necessarily in the best interest of Western civilization. Radical Islam is hijacking its plans and making a mockery of democracy itself. In South Africa, an earlier experiment in, quote, bestowed democracy is falling under the burden of abuse, much taken with its own role in undoing apartheid more than a generation earlier. The West prefers to look away, and obviously we're seeing that in spades. It appears to treat the plight of Western people in that country as a form of required penance. In the process, it indulges what is, in effect, a corrupt one-party state kleptocracy run along the party congress lines of its own mentor, the defunct Soviet Union. In 1797, the British Royal Navy feared South Africa would become a second America for Britain, while in the 20th century, the country was to Africa what the United States was to the world. Amabulu describes the developing crisis in the second America that will inevitably entangle the first America. In the end, the burden falls to the author to describe the demise of the first limb of the West to wither. It is a study in the death of civilization by its own collective hand, a severe warning for the West. Amabulu should give pause to every thinking Westerner. And honestly, it's factually and document-rich, you know, research-rich. There is no opinion really in there. You did an amazing job.
Thank you, ma'am.
The book's
the
huge.
Point is that at that time,
you need 2 men and a boy to carry it around for you if you're going to take the book on the road.
As the author of the thing, I would warn folks that it actually weighs 4 pounds. It's the size of a telephone directory
in a large city.
It makes an excellent doorstop, which is one of its greater merits, I think. And it also, the police would recognize it as potentially a blunt object, you know, as used by some people against others. But,
plus it's filled with facts, so that's really confusing sometimes in today's world.
It blows the total narrative.
And I guarantee the media has never read it. I'm terribly sorry. I walked you right into a blind alley here. We have to take a really quick break and then we'll come back.
That's okay.
Yeah, we're going to do that a couple times, I'm sure. Ashley's giving me arm signals in the background. Alrighty, we'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Harry Buyens. We will be chatting about South Africa today. What shall we do about okay. Now we have some uninterrupted time. She said.
Okay, I guess we stopped at the point where we had just mentioned the book, and I said that when it was published back in almost exactly 5 years ago, I actually warned that it would take 5 years for this thing to become a complete open sore on the planet. Okay, I gave the period of 5 years.
Why? Why did you pick that back then?
Two reasons. I have a feel for the rate at which things happen in South Africa, and secondly, I knew there would be this particular election coming up.
Mm.
And the U.S. is like that as well. It loses its mind every time just before an election.
We're going to make exception for 2020. We're going to lose our mind this year so we can experience the craziness for two full years rather than just one.
It does rather sound like that, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it really is that way, I'm afraid.
So, what we've talked about before on eight separate shows of yours is we went through the history of South Africa just a little bit. We talked about parallels. We talked about things where people have false parallels with South Africa. We talked quite a bit about the farm expropriation thing. But I guess for some folks, it remained like an abstract idea about some faraway place that doesn't affect them. So let me share the following with you. I put it for you under the title that the crisis in South Africa has reached the U.S. border. The first ever white South African farmer and his family have now asked for asylum at the U.S. border with Mexico. After waiting in a Mexican holding facility for 3 weeks, they met with U.S. Customs and Border Patrol, CBP, and spent 3 days in the custody of the agency. Over that period, they had extensive interviews, which included the famous or infamous credible fear test, which they apparently passed. Their daughter, who's a minor, was questioned for 3 hours by the CBP without their parents being present. They've been paroled into the custody of friends in the United States, and they do not have to wear ankle bracelets, as so often happen with people who try to do things correctly. Based on what CBP learned in the process, the family's been allowed to at least apply for asylum. There's a long road ahead for them, but they've done it all the correct way as far as the U.S. authorities are concerned. They did not jump a fence. They were not handled by coyotes. They did not clash with ICE in any way. They simply presented themselves properly to Customs and Border Patrol and asked for asylum from those who threatened their existence.
And so just in the back of my mind, I'm hearing people say, well, why didn't they just get a visa to come here from South Africa?
Well, if they took a visa and then overstayed the visa, that would not be doing things the right way.
Correct. And would the South African government let them go? Is there a way for them to apply for asylum in South Africa or from South Africa, maybe?
Replace the word South Africa with North Korea.
Right.
That's, I think, the part that people don't know or realize.
Okay. So this is the kind of thing, is that I don't know the identity of the family, and I would under no circumstances, for example, divulge it if I knew it. And the reason is simple. The moment their name is known, the communist ANC government in South Africa, along with their devoted allies, the BBC, CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, New York Times, Washington Post, will start to assail the character of the family, and that government will serve, I guess the fancy word is a démarche on the U.S. ambassador to South Africa, demanding that any possible asylum be immediately withdrawn. And, you know, you already know, as well as I do, that white people in North America only have to hear the word racist in a sentence somewhere on the horizon before they'll drop their guns, throw away their shoes, and run like hell for their very lives to the four wind directions, no matter what the truth or the reality or the nature of the party uttering that word. So, I will talk about these folks. I will not mention their names. I will not do a single thing that will help that decrepit government down there get at them.
Because you didn't leave by accident. You didn't get transferred with a job. You didn't... there are many reasons that somebody might leave a country that they had almost 400 years of family history. But you left on purpose.
I left on purpose, and these folks left because of what they experienced. Okay? And maybe... if Ashley would be so good as to line up, I guess it's clip 9. This is the attorney. This is the U.S. attorney for this family who's helping to guide them through this process. This comes from a YouTube video that the attorney has made. So I don't know if Ashley's ready for us with that.
What's going on is the government has voted to seize the land of white farmers without compensation. There are also a number of other laws that are discriminatory against whites, but this is the big one recently, is that the government has voted to simply take their farms and not pay them any money. And for the people who say that the stories about what's going on in South Africa are fake and there's no persecution of whites down there, it's all made up, this is well documented by the mainstream media that the government has voted on this. Here's a story. This is from the Daily Mail, and there's a lot of news stories about this. This isn't the only one. This is actually from early in 2018. It says, "We are not calling for the slaughter of white people, at least for now. South African Parliament votes to seize white-owned land as experts warn of violent repercussions." That quote, "We are not calling for the slaughter of white people, at least for now," that was from a prominent South African politician who said that publicly. This article says, "White South African farmers will be removed from their land after a landslide vote in Parliament." This is not some fake conspiracy. It's really happening, and it really happened to this family. Government.
Incredible. Okay. Incredible that a politician would say something like that. It blows my mind.
Bill, I thought it might be wise, since what you have is a U.S. attorney saying this, and people don't always want to believe attorneys. I'm aware of that. I work with lots of attorneys, and I can assure you they're perfectly decent human beings, but I know what the reaction sometimes is. So I went to the trouble of finding you the clip where that politician actually says it in an interview with an Indian chap. Okay? And that would be clip 2 in that list that I sent. So if Ashley could again help us out by lining this up while I buy her a couple of seconds of time.
Here we go.
I've committed. I've never slapped a white person. Nothing. I've never called for their slaughter. I've never called for their killing. At least for now. I can't guarantee the future.
Yeah, but I mean, you'd understand somebody watching that. They freak out. It sounds like a genocidal
film. Cry babies.
Cry babies. Make it clear.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay. So I did that especially for those folks who get kind of cringy when they hear the word attorney. Okay.
Yeah, I'd feel safe if I lived down there. Yeah, I'd feel like, you know, I could sleep at night.
And now, who was that? Just for reference,
that
for
was,
folks who
that
don't keep
track. Julius Malema, who is the leader of the third biggest party in Parliament, and previously was the youth leader of the ruling party. So he got fed up because the ruling party was not nasty enough yet to white folks, and so he split off, formed his own crowd. They call them freedom fighters, and they dress up in cheap red overalls, so they go to Parliament dressed in head-to-toe red uniforms, the true, you know, old Soviet colors, so to speak. So that's how he sounds in a regular interview with the news media, where he says he's not calling for the slaughter of whites, at least not yet, but he can't guarantee the future. And then he leaves there and he gets onto a stage and he does what you can hear in the first clip that I send you, if that is by any chance.
What type of freedom is this? That 24 years into democracy, we are worse than the way we were during apartheid. The people wanted their land.
So that's him himself admitting that things are now worse than under apartheid. all right. And then if we might hear clip number 3, you will hear what he then says when he gets on a stage in front of a big crowd of people dressed in red. And otherwise, in other words, he's party faithful. This is what he tells them to do. Clip 3.
To kill, come on, sir. Shoot to kill, kill a man. Kiss the poor, the farmer. Kiss the poor, the farmer. Brr, pa, pa. Brr, pa, pa. Attention.
Okay.
Okay, so people can't see, actually I should preface that. They can see the clips. I've put them all on the page for today. So if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, look for the show on March 3rd, 2019. It's at the bottom of the page. But,
well, that doesn't make the hair on your head, your arms stand up when you, I mean, he's just inciting killing the white people. Kill them.
So we'll give everybody 2 minutes to go look that up, take a quick break, and we'll come back. And, for those people who are not near a computer, Harry, I want you to tell them what they just heard. So we'll take a really, really swift break. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online.
Sure.
WeThePeopleRadio.us. Okay, so right before the break, we played a video, the sound from a video clip, and we've done that on some different shows, but
yes.
He's hard to understand, but I'll tell you what, he just sounds like a warlord. I mean, he is so a warlord, but he sounds like a warlord.
When people look at that clip, what they'll see is a stage. There's a guy on the stage. He's essentially running on the spot in a sort of ritual little dance that's called the toi toi in South Africa. It's a supposedly a revolutionary dance. And then below him, in front of the stage, is a sea of people dressed in red echoing his every word. And what he's singing is, kiss the boer, the farmer. He's saying kiss the boer, the farmer, because he's not allowed to say kill the boer, the farmer. He used to sing that. Then he was dragged to court for that, so he replaced double L with double S. Everybody knows what he means. As he says it, as he says kiss the boer, the farmer, he shapes his right hand and forefinger into the shape of a gun, and then he points it at the horizon sort of with a flick of his arm. And every time he does it, he goes... brr, pow, pow, pow. There's no doubt that what he means is kill the boer, kill the farmer. And the word boer means nothing other than farmer. It is Afrikaans, my language, my mother tongue, for farmer. It's the same word for the Dutch, the same for the Flemish. In German, it's bau. Every person in Northern Europe knows what that word means. It means farmer.
Hmm.
So no subtlety there.
No subtlety there. And now I'm leading up to something else here, which is very special for today. But I think what you first need to hear is the president of that country denying farm attacks after President Trump tweeted on the subject some months ago, which really annoyed that government down there. Believe me, it did. So clip number 7, if Ashley is anywhere near the right buttons, is that this is President Cyril Ramaphosa, the understudy and protege of Nelson Mandela, denying any farm attacks. He's also the guy who got the job as president, after promising that he would expropriate the farms of white people without compensation, otherwise known as he'll just take the farms and chase the people off.
We were seated together at the lunch table, so we never really got time to talk about the tweet. It was just an opportunity to shake hands, to say how are you and all that. But on the tweet itself, he was clearly misinformed. And whoever gave him that information was completely wrong. There are no killings of farmers or white farmers in South Africa.
We are at the postmortem.
Okay, that's pretty much it.
I like the cartoon music at the end because, really, he's just giving people fiction.
Yeah, I'm using a clip there from a Swedish guy, and he's helpful, but I don't share his extremely far-right views. So President Ramaphosa denies those attacks. That was one too many for the person in clip 8, who is a lady by the name of Mariandra Heunis, H-E-U-N-I-S. She's a lovely lady with four children, the last of which was born a week after her husband was killed in front of her own eyes and those of her daughter. And this was too much for Mariandra to bear, so she took to the air, and that is clip 8.
This message is for President Ramaphosa and the good people of America. President Ramaphosa recently stated very casually in New York to the media that there are no killings of white farmers in South Africa. There are no farm murders. Really? My name is Mariandra Yenes, and I'm a survivor of a farm attack. My husband was shot 6 times during such an attack. He was murdered in cold blood in front of me and my 6-year-old daughter. He was shot 6 times, and the last one was in the head. I had to pick up our broken life after that. I had to give birth to our 4th child, our son, 5 days after Daddy's funeral. These attacks do happen. It happens almost daily. Our story is one of thousands. What would you do if it happens to you or to your loved ones? What would you do if you had to raise 4 little children alone after your husband was murdered in cold blood and they stole nothing? How would you feel if you had to slip in the blood of your loved one? The smell of it seeping through the floors of your house, the house you were supposed to be safe in. These attacks happen, and it happens to good and normal people. What would you do if this happened to you? What would you do if your government denies that it happens? Would you keep quiet? So I ask you, the people of America, to help us to share this message, to help us to spread awareness of these farm murders, because they do happen. We appeal to you to help us.
There you go. I have just one question, really. I'm trying to do something really quickly here on the screen. I have 2 more clips to do with farmers, but right now, as we're talking, there is a lady sitting in front of her computer in South Africa who contacted me yesterday, and what I would like to do is share with you what she told me. I believe we should do that in the next section, and that would work much better. Right now, maybe we want to play one more clip, and this is from a lady describing an attack on her farm, and that would be clip 5. And if people, that's okay.
I mean, my attack was 6 years ago, and I can still smell them. I can still at times hear their voices. I can see them. I can see David. They separated us and they fought with David until he had nothing left in him. He couldn't fight anymore. And then he just shot him.
Was David killed because he was white?
The things that they said when I was with him, you being, the word white being thrown around quite a bit, the word black being thrown around a bit. Yes, I think it was more because he was white.
There are those on the outside who are latching okay. onto stories such as yours.
The point is, she also goes on to describe, you know, what's now happening. She's still running that farm. You can see her on her own tractor in that thing, in that clip. And I would defy every human being with a proper soul. Look at that particular video clip and look that lady in the eye. If you have a character at all to you, look her in the eye as she speaks. Okay.
And that clip is dated June 9th, 2018, so it isn't like it was a long time ago.
No, the killing was 6 years ago. She's still there. The interview is recent.
Right.
She also was asked what would she do if her farm were invaded, and that would be clip six, and maybe we should play that before taking the break. And then
okay. That's it.
Do you fear that at some point your land's going to be invaded?
Yes.
And what would you do?
I'd fight. I'm not going to stand down. My husband and I bought this farm legally. We put everything into this farm. Our minds, our bodies, our souls, blood, sweat and tears, everything went into this farm. This is my country as much as what it's everybody else's.
Okay. I'm not actually sure what one can add to any of that. Hopefully that gives folks a little bird's eye view of the human dimension of this thing. Believe me, I have not shared with you what happens during some of these attacks. But I know people who have to handle that. And when we come back from the next break that is probably upon us, then I would like to share with you a note I received from a lady I used to work with back in South Africa.
Perfect. We will be back. I hope you do go look up these clips. And for folks who want a lot more information, it's all there on the site at wethepeopleradio.us. Guest today is Dr. Harry Bouyans. It is March 3rd, 2019, and we're talking about South Africa. Okay.
So, Aaron, what I'd like to do is I'd like to introduce folks to a lady whose name I cannot share for reasons that she will be affected in South Africa if I do, badly so. I worked with her in the early 1990s. And I brought her into our organization because I thought she was just perfect for what we faced. She She was actually a freelance journalist, and more than that, she was a true free spirit. Used to ride around with a blue flower power Volkswagen Beetle, and with a bumper sticker that said "Just visiting this planet." Okay.
I think I've seen her driving through Mount Shasta.
Absolutely.
Her car's here now.
I just thought that our organization was too stodgy, too prudish, too everything, and that she would help shake this up. And she did. And a lovely lady. And we separated paths in the 1990s. And yesterday, as fate would have it, I get an email from her. And it turns out she's now involved in the South African judiciary, and her work covers farm murders. And she was contacting me because she had picked up on some of the stuff I'm doing. And here are her words to me late yesterday in an email, and I know she is listening right at this time. Going for 1 o'clock in the night over there, but she'll be listening. So I'm going to quote her, and I hope I do her justice. There is so much work. The courts can't keep up, and every criminal has all these constitutional rights. It's traumatizing and heartbreaking, Harry. I spend almost every day on rapes and murders. As we speak, I'm busy addressing a terrible farm murder. An illegal comes into this country across the border and cold-bloodedly shoots two white folks. The wife watched her husband drop instantly, shot twice at point-blank range. The accused and his accomplice then marched her all around the house whilst continually stabbing a knife into her, demanding safe keys, guns, etc. And then they shot her. She fell and felt her legs getting warm, and she knew immediately that the bullet had lodged in her spine. She survived, but she is in a wheelchair. I listen to her and their daughter tell the details in court, and day after day, I become part of this and feel it eating away the life in me. By the time I stop at night, I'm no longer whole. I'm even still working now, and tomorrow it all continues again. Yes, I live in terror for my children. They have no children. They can't in South Africa. I may still finish my degree, but that's if I live long enough. Elsewhere in her email, she carries on to tell me, now we have survival packs to make and gun licenses to get and tactical courses to attend, together with learning how to nurse war wounds and such. Preparedness is the key. And then she continues with, my daughter's husband has just bought an old army truck for transporting people to the mountains when it becomes necessary. They've been storing water, fuel, food, first aid meds and stuff for months now. For myself, I just pray for a quick death. Please, no rape or torture. Despite 4 security companies driving through the suburb on constant patrols, I have alarms inside and outside surrounding the property. But the attackers now know how to disable them, if they know nothing else. I helped her figure out where to buy a house.
Wow.
This is South Africa today. This is what ordinary white Christian people like you guys are living through in the east and the north of the country. I trust this has you calibrated.
It's just crushing. And then, I'm just going to warn people, when they go watch the videos that are linked, if you really want to be frustrated, be sure and read the comments below the video. I mean, people are absolutely, I don't even, you know, if there's more than 100% ignorant about the history. And after speaking with you on 8 previous occasions, and then this one, we know that the Dutch did not come there and kill all of the natives and steal their land. They don't owe the land back to anyone. They didn't steal it in the first place. And the only people who've really been persecuted in that area are the whites, as you so ably educated us, that they were the ones put in concentration camps.
Well, Aaron, I want to be clear about this. I think the white folks like myself did a whole bunch of stuff wrong there, okay? We cannot wash our hands and be Christian people. So things were done wrong. I don't think anything was done with evil intent, but there were things done that were so brazenly stupid that I would call it, you know, a stupidity that borders on evil. There were laws made that I cannot defend, and I'm not prepared to try and do it. But it's such a complex place with such a variety of players, and it's like nobody wants to spend 5 minutes to just find out the basics that will help them figure out, you know, all the stuff that's happening. And much of this trouble for us started in 1966, to be precise, on 6 June 1966 in Cape Town, when there was a visit by none other than the late Bobby Kennedy. And here are his words. "I come here this evening because of my deep interest and affection for a land settled by the Dutch in the mid-17th century, then taken over by the British, at last independent, a land which defined itself on a hostile frontier, a land which has tamed rich natural resources through the energetic application of modern technology. I refer, of course, to the United States of America." So he's on a stage in South Africa, and every line I quoted to you applies to South Africa and definitely applies to the United States. We're the same people with the same experience all up to that point. The trouble arose because of other things he said in that meeting when he started dragging the slave history in the United States, when he started to drag that into the South African picture where it doesn't belong at all. I guess nobody told him that white guys like me are the ones with the slave ancestors.
But see, that doesn't sell. That, I mean, that's what probably most people in this country believe happened, was that the whites went to South Africa and enslaved the black people, just like Americans. And it's just not true.
I got to watch the time here again, but the I'll go through something that I know I've mentioned several times before, but my earliest foreign ancestor in South Africa was a slave. It was an Indian slave woman who had killed her husband after he had abused her. She was going to be tied in a bag and then thrown alive into the sea to drown, because that would typically be the sentence. But the judge heard her plea for leniency about what her husband had done. There was evidence to that effect, and he decided to banish her. The Dutch knew about on the whole earth, and that was the Cape of Good Hope, or Cape of Storms, as some called it. And so she arrived there in April 1657. It so happens that on the same boat was another slave who worked in the household of the ship's captain. And both of them were sold at the Cape to local people, and my ancestor became a washerwoman for the commander, and the other lady also, both were from India via Indonesia. She became a wet nurse for the commander's children. Both my wife and I have slave ancestors in the household of the first commander at the Cape in 1657. My first European ancestor landed just a handful of months later and became the first ever person to fully and completely settle at the Cape, have children there, and be made a citizen and get a piece of land to become a farmer. My blood has been farming there since October 1657. But none of them are my first ancestor there. My first ancestor is actually a little Khoi girl, an indigenous Khoi girl, who was taken into the commander's household to become an interpreter. And she eventually married a Danish ship's doctor who went looking for the kingdom of Monomotapa no fewer than six times. That's who I am. Mandela has no slave ancestors.
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah, but they won't tell you that. You know, I think the New York Times would burst into instantaneous combustion if they had to process this.
The flames of truth.
No, I don't think so. They've dealt with a lot of misinformation quite well.
Yeah, the bad part is there's so much misinformation, you don't know. Well, I mean, sometimes you do, but you can't always tell what's real and what's fake.
Mm-hmm.
But that really is, besides the fact that, you know, you have an evil government doing bad things, but I think that's the hardest part about this particular issue, is that people come with all these preconceived ideas that are not based on any historical fact at all, and it's very difficult to untangle that and then get them back on track.
And then they... you know, like I've told you before, like the Danish professor in New York who looked me straight in the eye, rose to his 6'6" or whatever, 6'5", 6'6". All he still lacked was the horns on his head. Mm. And he looked me in the eye and he said, "You are a sick anachronism. You are a blot on the name of Europe. You should just die." My sin was that I had asked him, "What should we then do down there?"
So all the people who've had 300-plus year... I mean, people in South Africa have a longer bloodline history there. The whites in South Africa have a longer bloodline history there than many people in the United States who consider themselves, you know, not to be new to this country, but...
Yeah.
No, but they do have more national history.
My family doesn't go back 100 years.
Not even 100 years. We've got to take a break.
Most Americans.
Look at Bill trying to tell me what to do. Look at that.
Most Americans have a great grandfather that arrived in the country. Most white Afrikaners have ancestors that go back to the late 1600s.
Sure.
We've got a hard break coming up.
We've got the news coming.
So I got to tell Aaron what to do.
Again,
time for a break.
I like it when he has to tell me twice though, because I make him work for it.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Harry Bouyans. Good afternoon, and welcome back to We the People Radio. This is the second hour of March 3rd, 2019. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Team Power. Team Power is our local Kubota tractor dealer. Biggest one north of Sacramento, I think.
Wow.
I think. No, got a lot of tractors down there.
Far
as I know, yeah. Feels like it. Go down and see
really
them. They're 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. They have lots of tractors in the lot. They're coming in every day, pretty much every size and shape you can imagine. Got some big cleanup to do, limbs down, fire damage, lots of stuff. Go down and buy a new tractor and get it done in half the time. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can get them on the web at readingtractors.com.
Part sales service.
They do it all.
Everything.
Yep, good guys.
Okay. So our program today is The Real South Africa. This is part 9 in our series. We have no end point for the series, by the way, so we're happy that the numbering system that we've adopted as a society is infinite. It's going to work really well for our purposes. And South Africa doesn't seem to be getting fixed anytime soon, so I do believe we might have to push the limits of that infinite numbering system. So we always call it The Real South Africa. I give you the part number, 9, and then we give you a little context for the actual program. And today is the South African crisis has reached the U.S. border. And our guest is Dr. Harry Bouyans. I will not go into his whole bio again for the people who listened, who were smart listeners and listened to the first hour first. But he is a PhD defense and aerospace physicist, originally from South Africa, and his family has been there for over 360 years. So we're not just, you know, talking about stuff we... Okay, we're definitely not talking about stuff we saw on CNN. That's not one of the choices. Or what is it? MSLSD, I think is what Mark Levin called it.
Yeah, MSLSD.
couldn't be a better moniker. But just for people's reference, this is a weighty subject. There's a lot of information. I wouldn't ask you to just, you know, believe us. Don't believe us. You should believe Dr. Puyans. But, okay, so you don't want to believe him. You should get his book. His book is amazing, and it's massive. It's 4 pounds, we learned. I always joke and say it takes 2 men and a boy to carry it, but it is a serious book. It's Amabulu, Amabhulu, The Birth and Death of the Second America. And it is heavily footnoted in research. There's nothing, again, where you just have to, you know, believe them. Just opinions, listed opinions. Nobody writes 4 pounds of opinion. Well, I guess they might have. I think I've been to dinner with some of those people sometimes. I think we all have. We all have a picture in our head. The guy with the 4 pounds of opinion.
No, it's definitely but the it's definitive an, yes. Facts of you could use this for a textbook in any school to learn the truth about South Africa.
Exactly.
It's all there.
And on today's page, just for people, because, you know, we always run out of time, but the crisis in South Africa, there's quite a bit of information. I took all that he sent me and put it in a PDF. So if you want to read that, I put the pictures in the PDF. I couldn't get them to be on the website. It was just, I don't know, the website wouldn't do it. So you have documents for that, and the YouTube clips that we have played thus far are also listed on the site. So wethepeopleradio.us is where all of that information resides. You're free to do whatever you like with it. We'll post a commercial-free archive this afternoon, and I hope you will send it to friends, family, and other people who care about what happens to folks in the world. If you're sick of all that scintillating discussion about Michael Cohen, you might want to move over to an actual issue that affects real people that has real weight. All right. That being said, where would you like to go at this point?
Is that a question to me?
Of course, because, you know, we're we're just hanging out.
I thought I could make my way down some of the points that were posted on your website in that long, I don't know what to call it, treatise that I wrote that you posted on my behalf.
And it was quite good, by the way.
And
as always.
I sort of mentioned that I warned the world in 2014. Now, I have several, you know, friends in the United States, and a number of them are folks with radio channels. And even as I sat here now, my email went bing, 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 as Trump would say, behind me. And it's another team that wants me on the air on their radio station.
Good.
So the word is clearly getting out. But... You know, there's a couple of things that bedevil us in South Africa. Number one, I'll be the first to say our hands are not clean. There were things that happened that I in no way am prepared to defend and don't feel good about. But nothing that I think is in the category of let's kill one another. But there are things that they're in the United States, and you guys have been, as a nation, you've been wholly, utterly, and completely misled. And the thing that made it clear to me, or most clear to me, was in 2013, somewhere in December, when Nelson Mandela died. That following morning, I'm standing in my lounge, the TV's going, and there's one of those two ladies that they have with a surname Baldwin. One is Baldwin and the other one is Baldwin. One of the two Baldwins was on as the host, and she had a chap that he was American, definitely, whom she interviewed, and they'd obviously grabbed who they could find quickly and got this gentleman who very coherently told her, but Mandela's organization was branded a terrorist organization by the United States. And the Baldwin girlie's face crumpled into a frown, and I thought her jaw was going to go right through the desk.
How dare he?
You know, and that's when I realized, good Lord Harry, you're facing 330 million people who honestly don't know, who truly, honestly, innocently do not know the truth. If somebody that has the role of being a news host on CNN is shocked at hearing that, then something is deeply, deeply, deeply and profoundly wrong. Because none other than everybody's hero, Ronald Reagan, put them on the terrorist list. And now they're the government in South Africa. And nobody seems to think twice. They just say it in the same breath. and they're surprised that South Africa is not a little piece of heaven, you know. If you say the word South Africa to most Americans, they hear, you know, they see angels and hear violins playing.
It's all been fixed. It's all been righted.
And that is why that little brief little thing on the back cover of my book, where I say that the West is still congratulating itself about getting rid of apartheid. Can I respectfully ask that the West gets over itself?
I wish you would, and put a little force behind it.
You know, it's just, you screwed up, okay? Admit it. You screwed up. Go look in the mirror. The West screwed up. You picked the pig in the picture, and you made them the boss. That's what you did.
And it's certainly not the first time that's happened.
I was going to say, who could have seen that coming?
And that's why the whole thing starts off by the West has suddenly realized, oops, you know, dropping democracy like an injection or an inoculation left, right, and center in the world doesn't work. It was tried in Libya. Look what happened there. Okay. And I hate to have to confess this, but old Muammar Gaddafi was correct when he said that the people in the east of the country were Al-Qaeda. Those are the people who eventually killed your ambassador. But nobody heard him saying that earlier on.
No.
Okay, I heard it because I know what to look for and to listen for. But apparently no one else heard it. And I'm sure I can find that clip again if I went looking for it, where he's interviewed and he says, the people in the east at Benghazi, that's Al-Qaeda.
Well, and if you really want to look at it, as we go, as you had termed it, bestowing democracy upon the places around the world, we're actually descending into tribalism here in the U.S. So it's kind of like, well, that's confusing. I hate to say this. I don't know what's going on. Are we in some sort of time machine? But we have to take another break. What the heck?
That's fine.
Capitalism's wonderful, but it's very intrusive today. I'm finding it annoying. not in an Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez way. Not like that. Just, it's terrible thought. Yeah, we'll leave it at that. You're listening to We the People. Join us online. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
yourself up and dust yourself off and back in the saddle. You're on the front fire, everyone's watching. You know it's serious, we're getting closer, this isn't over. The pressure's on, you feel it, but you got it all, believe it. When you fold it up, oh, oh, and if you fold it up, eh, eh, tamina, mina, sangarewa, cause this is Africa. Tamina, mina, eh, eh, waka, waka, eh, eh, tamina, mina.
Kind of a fun song from Happier Times. It was from a big soccer thing. And I know so much about soccer, I should stop talking right now about it. Everything I know about soccer, I know just from that little 30 seconds of that song. So I'm looking at your list, and one thing, Harry, that we should remind people who are not actually on the site reading along with us, but that Ramaphosa is the protege and the favorite child of Nelson Mandela, who has since been revealed to have been the central member of the Politburo and the South African Communist Party.
Yeah, and I was going to talk a little bit about that.
Yes, good. I hope you will.
Because, I talk about it and people might think I'm flippant or, you know, very...
It's okay. You'll always look less flippant than we will, so we're going to make you look good.
thank you, ma'am.
We live to be at the bottom rung.
It's probably around about this point where I need to put my usual disclaimer in that says I trust folks will forgive my sometimes somewhat acid-dripping, ironic, sarcastic sense of humor. That's our defense mechanism down there. A South African without a sense of humor is a dead South African. So we tend to defend ourselves with irony and sarcasm. So what I did is I provided three links that show you three ways of looking at Mandela. The first link was an article around 2012 where the sort of regular media is dodging like crazy about whether he's a communist or not. And I give the link where folks can see that. And then the second little link is an article by a post-apartheid Afrikaner author, Rian Malan, who won all manner of prizes. I'm under the impression he was, I don't know what prize he won, but he's an international prize-winning author. And he analyzed that in 2014, a couple of weeks after the death of Mandela, and you can look at that, and it's he who identified Richard Stengel as the culprit that messed with the facts in Mandela's books or in Mandela's autobiography. I'll come back to Richard Stengel. And the third link I provide, all in a little bundle, is the actual South African Communist Party itself admitting Mandela's Politburo membership. Basically on the night of his death. So it's not as though we have to speculate. It's not as though we have to connive and contrive. It's not as though we have to extrapolate or exaggerate. In the end, all you need to do is look at what the Communist Party says. Paragraph 5 of the link I provide, that's their official release where they confess he was at the heart of their party all the time. So this was not a revelation to ordinary South Africans, but apparently it has been to the United States. Okay. When I mentioned that to a Canadian friend recently, he said, "Who cares?" Okay. Who cares?
Wow.
Now, the significance of the South African Communist Party. This is not like this little Ocasio Cortez girlie who woke up one morning and heard a word, then looked it up in the dictionary and said, "Oh, cool, it's called sharing alike. They call it socialism. Let me play with that." Okay? It's not something like that. The South African Communist Party was founded way back in 20. It's one of the oldest communist parties on earth. Please do not be fooled here. It's one of the very oldest parties. It was originally founded largely on expatriate folks from the Baltic states, particularly Lithuania, and on expatriate Welsh coal miners. Now, the coal miners were very hard done by in Britain. the Welsh coal miners, and certainly the Tsar's pogroms in the Baltic states were bad. So I can understand they were upset. Okay. The founding organizations, I actually list the groupings of people who got together in South Africa to create that party. I'm not going to read them all out in detail now, but that data comes directly out of the book by Davidson and Apollos, who investigated the matter of South Africa and the Communist International. And they go back to an era where I need to share with you that, for example, in the Boer War between us and the Brits, there was quite a contingent of Russians who came to help us. So way, 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 way back before people played with communism, the Russians actually helped us against the Brits. They sent ambulance groups, for example. And one of them, Yevgeny Maximov, became the general of the foreign brigade in South Africa fighting on Boer side against the Brits. Okay, now that foreign brigade also contained Americans at the time. So we're talking 1900 here. So it's not as though there's some sort of an ingrained racial hatred against Russians or anything like that. But I should mention that Lithuanian influence I mentioned, that's still around. When people put that word Amabulu into Google and they keep finding my name left, right and center, the book, the blog, etc., etc., in the middle of all of that, you'll see a YouTube video which is not mine. It is an old South African Broadcasting Corporation video that somebody put online, and it shows Mandela singing Kill the Whites, Bulala Amabulu. Next to him stands a man in a green shirt with his bald fist in the air. He's a white guy and he's singing Kill the Whites. And his name is Ronnie Kasrils. And Ronnie Kasrils was at that point the leader of the military wing of the ANC, and he'd been trained to the level of brigadier in Odessa by the Soviet army. And that used to be on his bio on the internet. I see they've rethunk that and kind of removed the Odessa bit now. But just go back in history on Google and you'll find it in the earlier versions. Now, here's the interesting bit. In 1927, a man named James Laguma became the first black South African communist to visit the Communist International Organization in the Soviet Union. On his very next visit, he took with him Josiah Gumede, the president of the African National Congress, the ANC, the group that's now the government in South Africa. You understand how far back this goes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, none of this is new.
Okay. So none of this is new. We've lived with this for like a century now, okay? Or going on a century. The people think we have a democracy down there. I guess on paper, it passes for a democracy, probably as much as what North Korea passes for one. The country is de facto governed outside the parliament by a thing called the Tripartite Alliance. And that alliance is between the ANC party, which contests elections, supposedly as part of this decrepit democracy, the Communist Party, that does not contest elections, but has an automatic home inside the ANC, and its members get to have some of the seats that the ANC has. And the third party involved in this tripartite alliance is the South African Congress of Trade Unions. But you need to read black trade unions, not white ones. Mm. That is just the way it is in South Africa. So, as I put it here, the Communist Party does not contest elections. It just basically festers in the middle of the ANC and provides the brains trust. So the decisions all get made outside parliament, and then they go back to parliament where the ANC has a 67% share of the house, and then they just rubber stamp it there, and they all yell and scream and whistle and stomp their feet. That's it. That's government in South Africa. So please don't tell me that it is a democracy where white people, the fact that they can vote makes no damn difference.
Sounds like California.
Northern California.
Yeah.
Oh, I think the Californian liberals would love that system, because mm-hmm. that's the way they're arguing. Now, you do all of this, you go through all of this, and I put here that there's no real democracy in South Africa. It's utterly irrelevant. Parliament makes excellent YouTube entertainment, though. You can watch it almost daily because there is some or other complete balls up on in the parliament. Of the time, you're gonna break your gut laughing at these guys. Okay. Of course, there's a few deluded whites that's clinging to the bench. The somewhat naive belief that they're actually doing something useful beyond filling YouTube channels. But here's the thing. When you now hear that history, that party history of the ANC, the guys who run the country now, the guys who want to take all the land. Number one, you shouldn't be surprised that they want to nationalize the land. I mean, that's what communists are about. But here's the interesting bit. A black South African farmer recently sued the ANC government for title to his land. Now that makes interesting reading.
Doesn't sound like a real healthy thing to do.
No.
Yeah, but do you know how badly that plays for the ANC mm-hmm. when a very black farmer sues the very black government for title to his land because the government is trying to write the law so they can steal the land from whites?
Sure.
So, you know, guys like me are cackling their heads off at this, you know, just, it's so ironic, it's a godsend. And, there's also another event that's happened in the recent past, but, maybe we should, have the next break before I go to that.
You're reading my mind. Thanks for that. All right, we'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Harry Bouyans, and we're discussing South Africa.
Who's to say I can't do everything, well, I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be. I'll share this love I find with everyone. We'll sing it.
It's kissing the day. Oh, the wheel in the sky keeps on turning. I don't know where I'll be tomorrow. Wheel in the sky keeps on turning. Tomorrow.
And we're back. All right. And Ashley said you had something that you would like to read at the end, so you'll have to just give us the high sign when you want to do that. She's in a different room Skyping with you.
We're, I've got the exit to the program sorted out here.
Perfect.
Just a throwaway comment here for what it's worth. All this stuff about South Africa, there was a time when I guess people saw me as being alarmist. My book came out in early 2014, and at that stage, certainly some of them said, sketches a dark picture of the future that does not have to happen, etc. I agree it doesn't have to happen.
Too late.
But I'm saying it's inevitably going to. And here it is. I mean, it's at your border. And here's the thing. In looking around at some of this stuff, I stumbled yesterday over something called the Tri-State Livestock News. Have you ever heard of the Tri-State Livestock News?
I have not.
Good, nor have I. But the Tri-State Livestock News is an online newspaper for the farming community. And I don't know which tri-state it exactly refers to, because there are many tri-state kind of operations.
Sure.
Okay. But, and it's very local, you know, it's like, where do you buy your tractor and where do you buy your feedstock for next year and all that kind of stuff. And it is reporting with great specifics on the horror in South Africa. So, I think that means we've moved past the point where folks can claim ignorance because they didn't see it on CNN. And matters have already moved way beyond the point that they're actually talking about in that article. So I just wanted to give a shout out to the Tri-State Livestock News. Thank you, folks, for actually picking up on the truth in South Africa and having the guts to print it. Most folks don't have that guts. Like I said earlier, just say the word racist and most folks I know will drop their shoes and run like hell. There's another aspect here that I think is worth pointing at, and that's the fact that South Africa is a sort of a window on the future of the United States, and the place has been a canary in the coal mine for the West for a long time. In the 20th century, I think I've already said, it was to Africa what the USA was to the wider world. But just as people tried to get into the USA by any means, just so black people braved man-eating lions to get into apartheid South Africa while their own governments attacked South Africa night and day. They were told the white guys were racist pigs and the South African black people could fundamentally do no wrong, even when Mandela's men bombed the apartment complex where my mother lived. And there's a picture on your website now of what it looks like when you kill children. So but all of this, while this was happening, while my own family was being bombed and children were being carried out covered in blood, there were violins playing in the formal U.S. media. And you know, at that point, that formal media was the only source of news, so the truth had no chance. Now it's different. Now there are people like you, there's people like the Tri-State Livestock News, etc., etc. Okay? Now, in the 1980s, while South Africa was still being run by Western people, I don't care of what color, Robert Mugabe to the north remained well-behaved. But the moment those civilized men lost control of their country, under Western pressure, I remind you, Mugabe showed his true colors. But the West lost interest. And it, like I said, ran at the first mention of the word racist. The biblical Pontius Pilate in the form of Britain looked on in silence at what was happening, having washed its hand, frozen in total terror at the possibility of being called racist. Now, Mugabe's world, the one that the BBC struggled so much to report on, has now arrived in South Africa. And the world can see what now happens under such an onslaught to people who know how to efficiently and effectively run things. For example, advanced economies, sophisticated industries, advanced financial institutions. South Africa had, in my opinion, probably the most advanced financial system in the world in the 1990s. High-tech establishments, complex networked infrastructure, water systems, electricity supplies, communication systems, not to mention sewage, which is now also failing. So the country's infrastructure is collapsing. There's now electricity blackouts rolling like the Egyptian plagues over the country. And crime's completely out of hand. Raw sewage is spilling into the Vaal River. And white people live in fear of their lives daily. And all of this is still happening to never-ending violent music from the mainstream media, still patting themselves on the back for having lied apartheid out of existence 29 years ago. And they cannot get suitably over themselves to see the truth. And, you know, I've suggested perhaps a CNN reporter has to have the dead and broken body of a tortured white farmer draped over his shoulders to notice. And then he probably still wouldn't report. He'd probably likely say the guy fell.
Right.
And sorry for my frustration. I don't know how to phrase it better. The one might very well ask, you know, so if you are Western oriented and you share the values that any reasonable American has, and you happen to have a black skin in Africa, does that are you going to be okay? Well, a few weeks ago, a black landowner in South Africa discovered his farm had been invaded by what he thought were squatters. So he went to investigate. That someone had put up a corrugated iron shack from which that person was selling portions of his, the farmer's, land at around $45 a piece. They chased the owner away, and when he went back there, he was eventually offered a 20-by-20 yard piece of his own land for free. That's a pretty good deal, don't you think? So yeah, that was my reaction as well. You know, you look at this and you want to laugh your head off, you know, but this is not funny to the guys who are running the shed selling the lots. They think this is the right thing to do because Malema tells them so. He says the white people steal this land, they must give it back. Okay.
And do they know? I never assume because I know that there are plenty of Americans who don't know American history. So do the people in South Africa, especially the black contingent in South Africa, are they just playing along with this, or are there a lot of people just taken in by the rhetoric and they really don't know their own history either?
They don't know the history, but what have they got to lose?
Right. It's working out for them so far, kind of.
It's working out just fine for them. The government's stealing on their behalf. You remember the old story about why it is that democracy is self-limiting? When people finally discover they can vote all the benefits for themselves, then they're going to vote themselves right out of an economy?
Right.
Okay.
And then there's that inconvenient part about when they run out of other people's money, or in this case, other people's property.
That was Maggie Thatcher. That was a fantastic quote, that one.
Yeah, and in this case, they're going to run out of their own food. Because the land they're stealing, it's not like they can operate it as a farm, and we don't have to go into that whole thing. But for people who are just kind of tuning into this whole idea, the land's being taken from farmers, being given to other people who don't know how to farm, so that's not being farmed. It's becoming more and more desolate, and I hope you go back in previous programs we've done with Dr. Billions, and he's got like views from Google Earth that'll totally prove that. So you don't have to take his word for it. Just, you know, follow along.
Here's the ironic bit. This is why you have to have such a sense of humor to live there. So this guy, whose land was invaded, a shack put on it to sell off his own land at $45 for a piece, and to which he was offered a 20 by 20 yard patch for free of his own property, a friend of his, in a stroke of ironic genius, suggested that he seek the help of the White Afrikaner Civil Rights Organization. Okay, it's not. That's us, the horrible white enemy, right?
Right.
According to the government. According to the government, we're the horrible white enemy who stole the land. Okay. AfriForum took the case, got a court order, and then to physically remove the invading squatters, they got the help of a private security operation called the Red Ants. You could do yourselves a great favor. Just put the word Red Ants, Red Ants, and then South Africa into Google, and you'll be amazed. Okay, so these are people who are otherwise looking for a job, and this guy came up with the idea of he'll create an organization where you can get a job at basically minimum wage, and your job is to remove people who are acting outside the law. You go there with the police do nothing because they never will do anything. They're completely useless. They got the job. Why should they do it? And so these private contractors with the Red Ants, they do the job. So the Red Ants remove these people from the property, took the shacks away and everything because the police had refused to do anything. The black landowner was lucky. The of white asylum seekers that we started the show with, he was assaulted by the police when he went to ask their help. That's what he claims. I'm inclined to believe him because I know of other such events. But I leave it to your Customs and Border Patrol to decide whether he's lying.
Well, it's interesting because I did do a little search, not through Google because I hate them, but anyway, through another thing, and I get through the BBC news, it says South Africa's many thousands of squatters live in fear of a security firm called the Red Ants, known for their ruthless approach to evictions. But then you could go to the Red Ants website, Red Ants Security Relocation and Eviction Services, aka Red Ants, is a multidisciplinary company offering services in the agricultural sector, build environment, farming, security, and sanitation. The company was founded by local entrepreneurs to support the social, economic, and infrastructure developments required of South Africa.
They're just trying
to help.
Oh,
my gosh.
They're there to help.
That's fantastic.
And,
both statements are true.
Yeah.
Welcome to South Africa.
Wow.
The only way you can get rid of somebody who's stolen your land is to get the red ants.
Yeah, this isn't really just from, I haven't even clicked on the links and I can already tell by reading that I don't believe they're going to help you get your land back. Let's take one last quick break okay. So that we can make sure we fit in the things you want to do in the last segment here. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Okay, Dr. Billions, you've got a paragraph for us, eh?
Yeah, I wanted to do two things. The one is a paragraph I would like to share with you guys as a closing statement.
We have 9 minutes, but still, I know how that always goes. Yeah. It's like nine minutes feels like one.
So before that, I just wanted to say that I think one way that Americans can view South Africa is it is essentially Barack Obama's America on steroids. He was very open about how inspired he was by South Africa. He even appointed Mandela's ghostwriter to his administration. The country's like a huge, giant petri dish in which the woes of the Western world are nurtured and can grow and metastasize rapidly. So you can therefore go there and study those woes like a bug under a microscope because it's in your face. That's the thing about South Africa. Everything's in your face. The weather is wonderful. The nature is wonderful. Everything is always somehow more clear there because nobody's politically correct, right?
Right. Okay. How magical.
It's a place where civilization has lost control of the country. So my comment to Americans is, rather than wait for a socialist government in the United States, which will steal thousands of dollars from you, kill your culture and your future, and defraud you of your heritage, you can just spend $1,500 now and go and see as a non-tourist. Go see South Africa as a non-tourist. Spend a week on a farm with a family there.
Who's going to say, and be sure to go on the farm tour.
Spend a week on a farm with a family there or with someone in a small town in the east of the country. It's bound to cure you of all your delusions. It will in particular cure you of any liberal white guilt psychosis that seems to afflict the USA. Okay? So.
And we've got plenty of that.
So my comment is, my predictions were not correct because I'm clairvoyant or brilliantly intelligent. I'm neither. It's because I come from South Africa where the vicious reality is in your face, morning, noon, and night. One doesn't need much intelligence or clairvoyance to know what's going to happen. Okay? Now, I've even had some criticism because I keep talking to Americans about all of this. All my life, I've had an unshakable faith in the basic good judgment of Americans. And it's actually a Democrat friend of mine who you can blame for that. And I really do believe that two documents underpin everything that really matters in the West. And the one is the Bible and the other one is the U.S., the preamble to the U.S. Declaration of Independence. Now, my comment to you is that there's a history here, and I want to share that history with you in the last couple of minutes that remain here. I've got it under the title of "We Brought Our Side, and Now Our Hour of Need Is Arrived." Ever since 1914, My folks have reported for duty in the hour of need of the West. In World War I, when the Allies needed help, my South African family was there. We flew the airplanes. We did the dying. My wife's family lost members in the Battle of the Somme. You can look it up on the internet. Battle of Delville Forest. Jan Smuts, an Afrikaans kid like me, or Smuts, I should say, an Afrikaner kid like me, helped Britain and insisted on the creation of the world's first independent air force, the Royal Air Force. You had an ordinary Afrikaner boor like me is the guy that you can accuse of forming the British Royal Air Force, okay?
Cool.
In World War II, when the Allies needed help, we were there. My father-in-law flew his Spitfire Mark 9 to protect U.S. and British ground troops in Italy. For his pains, he was shot down twice by the Germans. Second time, it damaged his back permanently. My youngest great-uncle was a dispatch rider in Italy after helping to defeat Rommel in Africa. An Afrikaner kid like myself, by the name of Sailor Malan, Malan is a very standard Afrikaans surname, was one of Britain's most famous air aces in the Battle of Britain. I believe he eventually held the U.S. Top Gun School at Miramar as well. He had such an effect that even today, you can buy online scale models of Sailor Malan and his pet dog. Okay, you can actually buy them today. Wow. That's the effect
that's
he had.
That's pretty cool.
And for what it's worth, that same Jan Smuts that I talked about before, who was Prime Minister of South Africa, it was formally suggested by Churchill's personal secretary to the king at the time that if Churchill should die, that Jan Smuts, the Afrikaner boer kid like me, should be made the wartime Prime Minister of Great Britain. That he was the only guy who could keep that job down. Okay, apparently the like the idea. When the U.S. asked for help in Korea, our veteran World War II pilots were there. They flew as part of the U.S. forces, first in P-51 Mustangs, but while those were great for shooting down Messerschmitts in World War II, they were pathetic at ground attack because those fancy radiators of theirs could only take one shot and then the airplane would overheat. So we lost a lot of guys in those Mustangs. And later they flew F-86 Sabres. I still saw those same Sabres in the town where I grew up when I was like 4 or 5 years old. And here's the bit that few people know. Policy Order Number 13 of the 18th United States Air Force Fighter Bomber Wing in Korea required that the first few bars of the South African anthem be played before the U.S. anthem. And this was done, quote, in memory of our gallant South African comrades. 34 South African flying cheetahs gave their lives in that process, flying with South African markings on their planes under the U.S. flag. And my comment to you guys, sorry if it sounds a bit poetic, but I think it's appropriate. Now is the hour of our need, and we beg you hear our cry.
Well, we definitely need to get the word out on this. I mean, it's
just can't be relayed to people enough. It just can't. There's no way that this just resolves itself. You know.
I suggest folks go and see that article on your website. That they click on those links, please. I'm a physicist. I'm not some sort of a political hack. I dealt all my life with facts and evidence. I do patents for a living for folks. I can't mess around with nonsense. My job is to make sure of truth, facts, and reality. I do not drag stuff onto your airwaves that I cannot substantiate. Okay?
Yes, I think, honestly, we've been doing this, since 2010, so we're into the, I mean, we're almost a decade of having different people on this program. And I can safely say of all the people that we have had on, you by far have the most extensive documentation backing up what you're discussing. We haven't had anybody come even close.
My life has not allowed me anything else. That is why my book is so long. I had to make sure that I don't have fictitious characters in there. That's why I had to make sure that each one was in my family tree, so that I was talking about real people who really lived. This rubbish really happened to them.
Well, it's we thank you for that. And I did have a request from someone who called the studio, wanted us to spell your last name. So that spelling is B like boy, O-O-Y-E-N-S. So
for those who want to know, that is a very old German surname from the southern end of Denmark, northern end of Germany, north of Hamburg, and there's a lot of them still there. There's a lot of Boyens people there. And my first ancestor of that name arrived in South Africa in 1713. It is not a common surname, but it is a South African one very distinctly.
Very interesting. And Dr. Boyens' website is cliffwoodfog.com, so it's C-L-I-F-F. WOODFOGGE.com. The fog part's the tricky part. But cliffwoodfog.com, and you just have so much information available for people. And, you know, if you're driving or, you know, jumping rope or whatever you're doing listening, if you would like to catch up on all of that, you can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. And today's date is March 3rd, 2019. We've listed programs going back to May of last year. So we've got to jump off, and we will look forward to part 10 on The Real South Africa.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Dr. Harry Boons. We'll talk to you guys next week. We're doing China next week.